Today is Wednesday, August 22nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, two men close to U.S. President Donald Trump are found guilty in separate trials on Tuesday. How will this impact the political landscape? Plus, is North Korea making good on its promise to denuclearize?
That he hasn't even been freezing his force, let alone denuclearizing. He's actually been nuclearizing.
And who is the number two most successful dance music artist? We have that answer and her new single. It's all ahead on today's International Edition. Two former close associates of U.S. President Donald Trump have turned out to be guilty of serious crimes. On Tuesday, former Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort was found guilty on 8 counts of bank and tax fraud, while Trump's former personal attorney, Michael Cohen, pleaded guilty to 8 crimes. Analysts say the two cases reveal corruption at the core of Trump's circle, although the legal actions may not have an immediate effect on his loyal base. VOA's Jeff Custer reports.
Michael Cohen pleaded guilty to bank fraud, tax fraud, and campaign finance law violations. Deputy U.S. Attorney Robert Kuzami said these charges are serious and reflect a pattern of lies and dishonesty over an extended period of time.
Mr. Cohen pled guilty to 2 campaign finance charges, 1 for causing an unlawful corporate contribution, and a 2nd one for personally making an excessive personal contribution, both for the purpose of influencing the 2016 election.
In addition, Cohen acknowledged paying off 2 women whose statements could have had a negative effect on Trump's election campaign. Paul Manafort was found guilty of 8 out of 18 fraud charges. Analysts tell VOA the two cases give new legitimacy to Special Counsel Robert Mueller's probe into Russia's interference into the 2016 U.S. election. The University of Miami's David Abraham says the Mueller investigation has discovered rot at the core of the Trump circle.
And though this conviction is on the basis of Manafort's pre-Trump engagement, it demonstrates the kind of activities and the kinds of people who were at the heart of the Trump campaign.
President Trump said Manafort's conviction does not prove any collusion between his campaign and Russia. But analysts note that Manafort's 2nd trial in September will look into his lobbying services for a pro-Russian government in Ukraine. Manafort attended a pre-election meeting at Trump Tower with other Trump associates and a Russian attorney who allegedly offered damaging information on Trump's Democratic rival Hillary Clinton. Georgetown University's Paul Schiff Berman tells VOA that while obtaining information about one's political opponents is a normal part of politics, doing so from a foreign enemy power is not.
And so that would clearly be illegal, and it would also suggest that he might be beholden to Russia for having provided information on the Hillary campaign and helping his election.
Berman tells VOA the investigation headed by Mueller cannot be dismissed as a witch hunt, as Trump has labeled it, and that it will likely pick up steam.
These people, certainly Cohen and possibly Manafort as well, are going to start cooperating with prosecutors. And so I think the drumbeat of information is going to continue.
Analysts agree that the most recent revelations of corruption among Trump's close associates may not have an immediate effect on his core supporters, but they believe the mounting pressure may flip enough voters to make Trump's re-election more difficult. Jeff Custer, VOA News.
On Tuesday, President Trump was asked about the legal proceedings involving both former lawyer Michael Cohen and ex-campaign chair Paul Manafort.
I feel badly for both. I must tell you that Paul Manafort's a good man. He was with Ronald Reagan. He was with a lot of different people over the years, and I feel very sad about that.
And the president tweeted on Wednesday, quote, Michael Cohen pleaded guilty to 2 counts of campaign finance violations that are not a crime. President Obama had a big campaign finance violation, and it was easily settled, end quote. But former U.S. Attorney Harry Littman said yesterday the crimes that Cohen pleaded guilty to stand as adjudicated crimes.
Essentially, it's clear that the president has co-conspirator liability. I mean, he didn't stand trial today, but he's as good as having been found guilty of campaign finance and wire fraud crimes.
Now, to get a broader perspective, I'm joined in the studio by VOA political correspondent Jim Malone. Now, Jim, it is so easy to get into the weeds of the crimes, the verdicts, the pleas, the implications. But we're also a little bit more than 2 months away from the 2018 midterm elections, which is often said to be a referendum on the president. What does this news do to the political landscape?
It's not good political news for Donald Trump and for his Republican allies in the Congress who hope to maintain their majorities in November. Look, there was a sense on Tuesday of sort of events spinning a bit out of control for the Trump White House. The fact that both of these court actions came on the same day, I think for voters, for Americans watching this, they may start to get a cumulative feeling of things going a bit wrong for the White House. It doesn't mean that something imminent is going to happen to jeopardize Trump's presidency, but if you just look ahead to what this impact might be on the midterm campaign, it's probably not going to be good for the president or for Republicans. Democrats were already surging in terms of enthusiasm and energy. This is likely to increase that among the opposition Democrats, and it could be a problem for Republicans trying to get their base voters out. It could actually depress a number of voters and lead them to not vote in November, which would be a problem.
Switching gears slightly, the president tweeted once more again this morning. He said a large number of counts, 10, could not even be decided in the Paul Manafort case. He neglected to say that there were 8 guilty verdicts in that same case. He called the Mueller probe once more a witch hunt. Now, while both the Cohen case and the Manafort decisions weren't directly related as part of the Russia probe, they did come out of that. What does this do to Trump's argument that this is all a witch hunt?
They're trying to pick at the shreds of hope in the developments. So, yes, you want to focus on the 10 counts that couldn't be decided as opposed to the 8 that were. The main takeaway on the Manafort convictions will be that the Mueller probe has once again established its bona fides, that they are finding, you know, violations of law. They're bringing forth cases in the courts, and they're winning. There have been a number of other indictments. There have been guilty pleas. This is the latest in a series of legal victories. So it makes it harder to argue from an objective sense that the Mueller probe is based on a witch hunt if you've got actual convictions to go. Now, you're right to point out, and the president and his allies seize on the fact, this was not directly related to Russia's involvement in the campaign, collusion with the Trump White House. But I'll also note that Michael Cohen's attorney, Lanny Davis, is already hinting in broadcast interviews that his client may have a little bit more information for Robert Mueller beyond the payments that were made in the case that was adjudicated on Tuesday.
VOA's Jim Malone is our political correspondent. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Among other top stories, Zimbabwe's capital was under tight security Wednesday as the Constitutional Court began to hear the main opposition party's challenge to the results of last month's historic presidential election. Police barricaded the streets around the court in central Harare. U.S. President Donald Trump's national security advisor says the reimposition of economic sanctions against Iran has had a profound effect, and the administration wants to go further than the measures in place before the 2015 Iran nuclear deal. A U.S. judge has denied bond to an Iranian-born U.S. resident accused of involvement in a conspiracy to spy for Tehran on Iranian opposition activists and Israeli and Jewish groups in the U.S. For expanded coverage of these stories and more, visit our website. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
A team of scientists examined data from NASA's Moon Mineralogy Mapper, or M3 instrument, that was aboard India's Chandrayaan-1 spacecraft to directly observe conclusive proof of water ice on the moon's surface. The team found evidence that the ice was distributed sporadically in the moon's polar regions and could be of ancient origin. Most of the ice at the moon's south pole, found by the scientists, are within lunar craters, while the amount of ice was more widely and thinly spread at the north pole. NASA says that sunlight never reaches the polar regions due to a small tilt of the moon's axis. NASA's M3 instrument, an imaging spectrometer, was able to detect and identify the signatures of three key properties that prove the existence of water ice on the lunar surface. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. The commander of the U.S. forces in South Korea is General Vincent Brooks. He said on Wednesday that while nuclear diplomacy with North Korea may be successful, Washington must continue applying pressure so that there's not a reason or even an ability for the North to back off. Speaking at the Seoul Foreign Correspondents Club, Brooks said he generally supports a pullback from some outposts along the demilitarized zone dividing the Koreas.
I have some concerns about what that means militarily to the ability to defend along the military demarcation line and in depth beyond it. And I believe that there's a reasonable degree of risk that's involved in this, not an excessive amount of risk as a combined forces commander to the defense of the Republic of Korea.
Brooks said the chances for a diplomatic breakthrough with Pyongyang are better now because of new governments in Seoul and Washington. Brooks added that the threat posed by the North's missile and nuclear programs has never been greater. His comments followed a statement by the UN Atomic Watchdog, the International Atomic Energy Agency. The IAEA warned it had found no indication the North has stopped its nuclear buildup and said the continuation and further development of the North's nuclear program and related statements is a cause for grave concern. In a Reuters interview on Monday, President Donald Trump said he believed North Korea had taken specific steps towards denuclearization, and he would most likely meet again with Kim Jong-un as he did in Singapore in June. RAND Corporation's senior defense analyst Bruce Bennett told VOA's Victor Beatty, North Korea appears to be separating plutonium for use in nuclear weapons and producing high-enriched uranium.
They're concerned that there's evidence that despite Kim's claim that he's prepared to denuclearize, that he hasn't even been freezing his force, let alone denuclearizing. He's actually been nuclearizing. He's probably built 5 to 8 nuclear weapons so far this year, and that's not good.
Is it a cause for grave concern, as the IAEA said?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, think about it. President Trump agreed to meet with Kim Jong-un because Kim Jong-un said he was going to abandon his nuclear weapons. This is a classical North Korea bait and switch. Kim Jong-un promised one thing. He's now refusing to do any kind of denuclearization. And after his meeting in Singapore, he went home to North Korea, and according to several sources I have, he's briefed the senior elites that he was never going to give up his nuclear weapons, that they were key to regime survival. President Trump probably would have never met with him unless he offered to abandon his nuclear weapons. Now he's reneging. That's a concern because it looks like he's going to keep building. And that then pushes the U.S. into some escalated response against him.
Mr. Trump, in an interview Monday with Reuters, said he believed the North had taken specific steps toward denuclearization, and he would, quote-unquote, most likely meet again with the North Korean leader. Is that a little premature?
Well, I don't think it's premature. I think Trump is trying to give Kim Jong-un every opportunity to prove that he's prepared to do this. If, in the end, Kim Jong-un refuses to do what he's promised to do, then President Trump can say, okay, now we've got to do something more serious because a North Korea with hundreds of nuclear weapons is something we will not accept. He's going to give Kim every opportunity, but eventually Kim's going to wear out the possibilities.
The U.S. on Tuesday announced more sanctions, this time on 2 Russian shipping companies and 6 vessels it said are involved in the transfer of refined petroleum products to North Korean vessels in violation of international sanctions.
I think that if the administration's done that, they've got photo evidence of those ships. They can clearly demonstrate that those ships have done that. And they're probably waiting for the Russians to say several times that no, they didn't. So then the administration can come out and say, looks like you guys aren't telling us the truth. Here's the photo evidence. It's a lot like the Cuban Missile Crisis where the Soviet Union, Khrushchev, said, no, we're not doing that. And then the photo evidence demonstrated that they were. So I think the Trump administration is trying to play a solid hand, and Russia just doesn't want to be caught in their bad behavior.
Wednesday, South Korea's Yonhap News Agency said South Korea hopes next month's planned third inter-Korean summit this year will set the pace for denuclearization. No date's been set for the Pyongyang summit, which may follow a fourth trip to North Korea by U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. This is International Edition.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, pressure mounts on Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni over the beating and detention of music star Bobby Wine. And we'll discuss the legacy of Kofi Annan on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
From the Voice of America, this is International Edition.
Donna Jackson, I'm coming.
Joining me once more in the studio is VOA One The Hits, Mr. Larry London. Welcome.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to everybody. Thank you, Steve. Well, I'll tell you what, guess who's back? It's the youngest member of the Jackson family.
No way, really?
Janet Jackson is back at age 52. She's the youngest member of the Jackson family. Recent recipient of the Billboard Icon Award. Now she has a new song out, which means it won't be too long before we'll hear the 12th new album from Janet Jackson.
Get out. 12 albums?
12 albums.
It seems just like yesterday I was, you know, listening to her first album when I was in high school anyway. But man, that's amazing.
Yeah, you know, she's been doing this for quite a while. In fact, she holds the record for most consecutive top 10 Billboard chart entries at 18. In 2008, Billboard listed Janet as number 7 on their Hot 100 all-time artist list. She was named 5th on the top R&B artist list of the last 25 years. And she's the second most successful dance music artist just behind Madonna. So today, for you, Steve, I brought in her brand new song, which is called Made for Now, and it features Daddy Yankee. Made for Now, Janet Jackson. She's been performing this on the award show. She's been on the late night talk show circuit. So she's gearing up for the new album. The last time that she had an album out was 2015. It was called Unbreakable. And her last top 10 hit, 2001.
Wow, that's a
long time ago.
Yeah.
17-year stretch. Someone to Call My Lover with her then boyfriend, Jermaine Dupri. Now, Janet got married for the first time at age 18, which was 1984.
Mm-hmm.
She married James DeBarge. That marriage lasted a year. Then she married director Rene Elizondo in 1991. That marriage lasted 9 years. And in 2012, she married a billionaire from Qatar named Wissam Al-Mana. They had a son in 2017, Issa Al-Mana, but divorced about a year later. So she hasn't been doing well in the marriage world. There were allegations of abuse in that marriage. Mm. And so she's now raising her son and getting ready for a tour. Now, some of the past hits, I'm sure you'll remember these. Nasty.
That's the one I always remember because it has that definitive beat to it.
And Rhythm Nation.
Rhythm Nation.
And That's the Way Love Goes, Together Again, and All for You. So she is one of the big names in pop music history, and we're glad she's back with yet another single.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much, Larry, for stopping by. Anything else we need to know about Miss Jackson?
Well, she was Billboard's second most successful recording artist of the decade in the 90s, just behind your favorite, Mariah Carey.
My favorite. I will say this. I remember Mariah Carey, and I had one of those cassette singles of Vision of Love when it first dropped.
Wow.
I think that was my very first cassette singles, what they call them. Remember?
I remember them. I unfortunately remember 8-track cartridges, too, in cars.
I did have a friend that had an 8-track. I still prefer the 45.
Yes, absolutely.
And the record player my mom had at home had the 78 speed as well.
Janet Jackson, Made for Now, the new single featuring Daddy Yankee.
Larry London is, of course, the host of VOA's Border Crossing Show. Larry, where can we find these?
Well, you can go to Facebook and find me at facebook.com/VOA Larry London. And you can check out Border Crossings at 1500 Universal on the VOA One Network.
Larry, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you.
And finally, on this day in 1851, the schooner America outraced more than a dozen British vessels off the English coast to win a trophy that became known as the America's Cup. In 1862, President Abraham Lincoln responded to Horace Greeley's call for more drastic steps to abolish slavery. Lincoln replied that his priority was saving the Union, but he also repeated his personal wish that all men everywhere could be free. And in 1932, the British Broadcasting Corporation, the BBC, conducted its first experimental television broadcast. And that is going to do it for today's International Edition. Patrice Martin directed the program, and Nick Ivanov engineered the broadcast. But before I do go, I do want to thank you for taking time out of your day, to join us. Now, to keep up with the latest pictures, videos, stories, and more, be sure to check out The Voice of America on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a wonderful Wednesday.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Taking on corruption is a tremendous challenge for any government, said U.S. Chargé d'Affaires to the Bahamas, Stephanie Bowers. It takes unwavering leadership and resolve to push for increased transparency. Chargé Bowers spoke at the August 8th signing of the Eighth Amendment to the Letter of Agreement on Narcotics Control and Law Enforcement with the Bahamas Prime Minister Dr. Hubert Minnis and Minister of Foreign Affairs Darren Henfield. In his remarks, Prime Minister Minnis said his administration remains resolute in its commitment to address corruption. Chargé Bowers stressed that the signing was an indication that the United States takes the issue as a serious one. The funding supports law enforcement professionalization and anti-corruption reform. For the last 8 years, the International Narcotics and Law Enforcement Affairs Office at the U.S. Mission to the Bahamas has provided nearly $40 million in foreign assistance to our Bahamian partners, said Chargé Bowers. We specifically focus this assistance on law enforcement professionalization, counter-narcotics, and rule of law programs. Today we are signing an amendment to the letter of agreement through which this funding flows, she noted. This amendment expands the scope of this assistance to provide technical support, training, and equipment in furtherance of the Bahamian government's transparency and anti-corruption efforts. President Trump demonstrated the importance he places on tackling corruption by issuing Executive Order 13818, which underscores that corruption undermines the values that form an essential foundation of stable, secure, and functioning societies, has devastating impacts on individuals, weakens democratic institutions, degrades the rule of law, perpetuates violent conflicts, facilitates the activities of dangerous persons, and weakens economic markets. This signing ceremony today marks the seriousness of our purpose, said Chargé Bowers. The U.S. government is now making available our foreign assistance funds to support transparency and anti-corruption initiatives in the Bahamas, she said. We know that increasing transparency and tackling corruption takes time and that a lot of hard work is required as well as a lot of patience. However, the United States will be a steadfast partner to the Bahamas as it takes on these challenges.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.